Hello and welcome to the Imprint Weekly Podcast. I'm John Kelly, senior editor of the Imprint, a daily news site covering child welfare and youth justice around the country. You can read all of our coverage at imprintnews.org or check us out on Facebook or Twitter at the Imprint News. You can also sign up on our homepage for our free weekly and monthly newsletters. And for professionals in child welfare and youth justice, subscribe to our Youth Services Insider section for a closer look at news on business, policy, and practice. The Imprint Weekly Podcast is also a member of the Safe Camp Audio Network. Check out our show page and all of Safe Camp's other great podcasts at safecampaudio.org on the web, at Safe Camp Audio on all social media. Today's guest is Bruce Leslie, president of First Focus on Children, who has joined us to talk about the child tax credit. As many of our listeners know, the credit got jacked up by $1,000 or more during 2021 as part of the Biden package of coronavirus relief, and was available for the first time during that period for parents who earned very low or no income. So it changed a lot. And when that expired, the credit went back to normal, and that put millions more kids back into the poverty column. So I want to talk to Bruce because there's an augmentation of the child tax credit on Capitol Hill right now. It's already passed the House. Senate is up next. Bruce is up on all the details, so he joined us to talk about that. This, of course, is highly relevant to child welfare conversations because there is all kinds of energy around advocating for cash and concrete support as a central driver of child safety. And there are all kinds of folks in the research community really getting into the nitty-gritty and studying the impact and effect of cash supports and concrete supports on maltreatment, on reporting, on all things child welfare. A few that come to mind: Will Schneider, Lindsay Bullinger, Kelly Rison. There are more. Maybe I'll drop some links to some different studies and things that we've covered around that in the show notes for this episode. So, you know, whether you're of the view that a lot of child welfare involvement is just poverty being confused for neglect, or you see it more as a bank shot, like poverty can prompt or exacerbate substance abuse or mental health issues, for example, or you accept that both are happening because that's possible, I gotta think there's close to unanimity around the idea that keeping children not poor is the best weapon, or macro weapon anyway, in preventing them from experiencing either child welfare involvement, maltreatment, or both. And, you know, that's because the numbers really show that the greatest predictor of child welfare involvement really is the presence of poverty in a kid's life. The National Incidence Study of Child Abuse and Neglect, which is just called like NIS hyphen, whatever iteration they're on. The last one was NIS4, which is a bit dated, 2010. Maybe they're coming out with some soon. I should check on that, actually. I'm just going to read the section from that study, which really it goes back and sort of reports on the experience of harm to children. And this is what they have to say about socioeconomic status. Children in low socioeconomic status households had significantly higher rates of maltreatment in all categories. They experienced some type of maltreatment at more than 5 times the rate of other children. They were more than 3 times as likely to be abused and about 7 times as likely to be neglected. And the only, you know, circumstance for kids that had higher risk profiles than just low socioeconomic status was a household with a single parent who was living with a full-time partner who was not a parent. I think other than that, poverty or so low socioeconomic status was the thing most associated with higher risk of maltreatment, abuse, neglect, all that. So we will get to our conversation with Bruce Leslie in a little bit. But first, I mentioned earlier in the month that we would be adding some great new podcasts featuring young people with lived experience in foster care. One of those is Interviews, the new monthly show coming from our own Youth Voices Rising program and its director, Ivory Bennett. The other is Self-Taught, which features former foster youth discussing sex, health, and life. It's produced by the Reproductive Health Equity Project at the National Center for Youth Law, and Kat McLeod from that program is nice enough to come in here and quickly tell our listeners a little bit about the podcast. So, Kat, thanks for jumping on with us on the Imprint Weekly Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm just finding out about your station and all the things that you offer, and it's really exciting.
We're honored that you guys would be a member. So before we get into the podcast, standard rules on ours is all our guests have to tell the folks a little bit of something about themselves. So I'm going to give you the categories. You give me a favorite and at least one of them. You can give me more than one if you want. TV show or movie, book, musical group, or sports team. Kat McLeod, what do you got?
Musical group, like genre, or like...
Could be a genre, could be an artist, could be a group, whatever you want.
Okay, well, it's a little bit embarrassing, but probably my favorite go-to genre of music is kind of like a folk punk. That's usually really can change my vibe if I really need to.
That is not two genres that I think about being mixed very often. Can you give me an example of what band that you listen to in that? Because I like punk a lot. I like folk a little. I'm willing to try.
Yeah, probably some of the classic folk punk bands would be like Days and Days and like AJJ. It's short for like Andrew Jackson Jihad.
AJJ, I'll check it out. Okay, so let's just start with this. Tell everybody a little bit about, you know, what the goal is of Self-Taught as a podcast, just big picture. Then we'll get into the two different seasons.
Well, I guess we're trying to accomplish a lot of things, but the short answer is to support former foster youth in all the things that they're struggling with and try to create some community for them.
And I would imagine you guys wouldn't mind terribly if other people heard this podcast. I have listened to many of your episodes of season one, but it really is, and it comes through in the way that you guys do it. It is, your aim is very much just on reaching other young people who have experienced the system or are still experiencing the system.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's a very cool show. I really hope everybody checks it out. And shameless plug, we talked about this a little bit just now, but we are featuring Self-Taught as one of the shows on our podcast network, which is called Safe Camp Audio. I will drop a link to their show page in the show notes for this podcast, but you can just go to safecampaudio.org. I think we got them right at the top, so you can see them nice and shiny in there. So you've gotten one season down. Tell folks, and we're going to have that season. It's already up, actually, if you want to go check that out. What did you guys cover in that first season? What are some of the big topics that you hit on?
Oh gosh, it was so long ago. Let's see. We started off talking about, we thought the most obvious place to start is the talk. A lot of people don't get the talk, or so we started with that and just talking about real awkward puberty moments. And we really just want the listener to feel a sense of connection and community. And like, you're not the only person that's gone through this. You're not alone in that. We covered like parenting and reparenting. We have an episode on intersections of identity. We talked to Emilio, who is a trans person and also talks about their experience with being Hispanic. Yeah, we covered a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, you sure did. I thought that reparenting episode and that concept was kind of like a new framing for me as I was listening to it. And I was like, man, this makes a lot of sense, obviously, for young people have experienced foster care, really, for probably anybody about to become a parent. I may be a little biased, though, because one of the guests was Tamara Sebesta, who used to work for us. We all know at Fostering Media Connections that she's a rising star. And I've heard that she's joining the team right now as like a kind of co-host for the season.
Yes, for season two. She is incredible. She's so great. I started doing this and it was like a dream come true. So amazing for me to get this opportunity. But for her, it was like in the stars. It was always supposed to be for her. You know what I mean? Yeah. She was cut out for it for sure.
Totally. So tell me quickly just about season two. I mean, this is dropping also. You can get that also on Safe Camp Audio. What are some of the issues that you guys tackle in this season?
Some of the episodes are led by Tamar, and I still got the opportunity to do a couple of them. One that I'm looking forward to checking out is about foster youth rights, especially working in the STRTP. My girls are always talking about it and always trying to understand it, and it's a complicated issue. So I'm looking forward to learning some stuff from there. I think we talk some more about birth control and STIs. We talk about prenatal care and abortion and mental health.
Very cool. And for our listeners who are not California-based, Kat referenced STRTP. That's, correct me if I'm wrong, Kat, but that's like a therapeutic-oriented group setting, like a residential care facility for youth. Is that about right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. It's like a treatment program, right. I guess, for
Right. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and again, we'll link folks to this stuff so that they can get all these great episodes, but it's a really amazing program driven by the fact that you guys are having very honest conversations about some really difficult things as young people experience the system. How do you personally, you know, think through deciding what to share in this kind of public way about yourself? Like, what are those conversations like for you and everybody else that appears? That's a tough thing, I gotta think.
Yes, I am a very anxious person, so I try not to think about it too hard because otherwise I'll kind of trip myself up. And the core of it is just to be really authentic and use that as kind of a life raft for anybody else that's out there that's struggling. So I do a lot of personal reflection before starting and trying to think about, like, what were some of the takeaways of my experience? That's usually my go-to, is try to find the lessons learned.
The show is self-taught. You can find it on Safe Camp Audio. We'll drop a link to that. Of course, you can find it also directly yourself on Apple, Spotify, or all these places where you can get podcasts. Kat McLeod, thank you for joining us on the Imprint Weekly Podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right. When we come back, our conversation with Bruce Leslie of First Focus on the Children.
Are you a professional in the field of child welfare, juvenile justice, or other family and youth services? Subscribe today to Youth Services Insider, the imprint's exclusive section on all the insider news you need to stay in the know. Funding opportunities, major federal and state policy shifts, interviews with key leaders in the field. It's all available only for our Youth Services Insider subscribers. Sign up for a monthly or yearly subscription today by visiting imprintnews.org/subscribe. Our podcast listeners get 10% off their subscription by entering the promo code PODCAST10. That's imprintnews.org/subscribe and get 10% off your subscription by entering the promo code PODCAST10 today.
All right, we have discussed many times changes to the child tax credit on this podcast before, especially in 2021 when the American Rescue Plan Act included a boost to the tax credit, made it available to more low and no earning income families, and moved it to a monthly distribution at a time when that was really important. Child tax credit is back in the news, in the mix on Capitol Hill. And here to discuss that with us is Bruce Leslie, president of First Focus Campaign for Children. Bruce, thanks for jumping on and talking tax credits with us.
Absolutely. Great to see you, John, and happy to be on.
You too. And your cat popped into view. I see the cat now behind you. Nice. So Bruce listens to the podcast, so he knows the rules. So you got to give something to these guys about yourself before we get into the weighty stuff. So here are the categories, Bruce. Favorite TV show, movie, sports team, book, or musical group. You don't have to give me all. You can give me up to all. Well, have to give me one. Bruce, what do you got?
Right now, like, we're watching the latest season of True Detective, and it is awesome. And like every Sunday night, I am waiting to see Jodie Foster and crew. So it's really well done. And, you know, really it has, you know, all the elements of a good story. And I love that they really are getting into the Alaskan tribal communities issues. And it's really good, really good. I've been, you know, not all of them are, you know, seasons have been great, but this one's particularly really good.
I really liked seasons 1 and 3. I thought 2 was like niche, kind of weird. Yeah. But I mean, it was enjoyable, but it wasn't as good as the other two. I haven't started this one. I just keep seeing all the memes online of like how hard it is to follow. So I like a challenge. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. The sports side, you know, I basically just follow all my college team and all my kids' college teams. So my kids went to Boston College, Maryland, and Wisconsin, and I went to University of Texas and University of Texas, El Paso. So those are my teams.
UTEP. Wow, that's a good little spread, though. You got to think on any given year, one of those teams is going to be good at something. So
yeah, at least some will make the NCAA tournament and stuff like that. So it's good.
Nice. So I think we should probably like level set and not assume everybody knows everything about this, because I certainly don't. Child tax credit, that has existed for a very long time. The sort of base expectation of child tax credit in this country is $2,000 per child. There is a requirement that, you know, the filer is earning $2,500 or more. And a portion of that is refundable. I always feel like I screw this up, so maybe you can explain it. But refundability means, like, even if you don't owe taxes, you can then get it back as essentially as cash at the end of the year, correct? Did I cover the OG tax credit correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right.
Okay. So now I don't even want to attempt this, because you're going to have it better in your mind. What did that change to as part of the American Rescue Plan? Like, what were the, you know, significant changes that sort of beefed up the tax credit at that point?
Yeah. So I think it's important for people to know that when the first idea of a child tax credit was the National Commission on Children in 1991, mm-hmm. that issued its like big, you know, landmark report on every single possible kid issue, right? So there's everything on healthcare to child welfare to education, early childhood, childcare, you know, the whole gamut. But this is where the idea of creating a child tax credit really came from. And the recommendation was to make it fully refundable. And the idea was to benefit children and to recognize the costs associated with taking care of kids. And in fact, when it's described, it's even described as helping low-income and middle-class families with children. Mm-hmm. So what has been unfortunate, I guess, is that the credit is not fully refundable. So everyone doesn't get the same amount. And so actually, there's 18 to 19 million kids in this country who do not qualify for the full credit. They're the people who are in families with lower income.
And I think that's the thing that is probably hardest to get your head around, right? Is that the children and the parents of those children who are least likely to avail themselves of the tax credit, other than like the very, very, very rich, are the very poor.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so you know, there's 18 to 19 million kids on the low end who don't qualify for the full credit because their parents make too little. So the kids most in need.
And how many kids is that? I know you said it just now. How many?
It's 18 to 19 million. So about almost a quarter.
That's a lot.
More than a quarter.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. And so the American Rescue Plan did make that fully refundable for made every child eligible for the child tax credit up to $400,000 of income for a family, and then it phases out. So, you know, poor kids, middle class kids, rich kids, and it was great. It cut child poverty dramatically. The estimates are that, I mean, due to all the different provisions in ARPA, child poverty was cut more than in half, but the child tax credit alone was responsible for an estimated 46% of the cut. So, you know, as an organization that aspires to, you know, eliminate child poverty, no child should live in poverty, and it affects every aspect of the lives of kids. All the research shows that literally every aspect of the lives of kids is affected by poverty. And so it's important. It's just critically important. And so when it expired, unfortunately, it was only for 1 year. You know, for the listeners who don't know this story, I mean, it passed in the House to extend it, and then it went to the Senate, and a combination of Senate Republicans and Senator Joe Manchin, instead of thinking about the kids. So this is the problem, is the focus changed from being, this is a program for children. The focus was on the deservedness of adults. And so Senator Manchin said, well, I'm not sure if people will work as much, and they may spend the money on some nefarious things, so I'm not going to support its extension. So It expired, and the consequence was that child poverty went from 5.2% in this country to 12.4%. It more than doubled because of the expiration of the child tax credit. And, you know, that's 4 million more children in this country who now live in poverty because, you know, of the, you know, the Senate vote. Actually, they didn't have a vote. He just killed it from even coming out.
Yeah. So that was, thank you. That was very important context. I think before we get to this new proposal, I want to get some specifics on what that 1 year window looked like for families so that we can then kind of compare what's in this one. So correct me here, if I screw this up, my recollection was it's So again, the base child tax credit was 2,000. It went up to 3,000, all the, between 3,000 and 3,500. Was that right? Something like that.
Yeah, so it was $3,600 for zero to six. And then for all other children, it was $3,000. And also, the child tax credit, for some reason, doesn't cover 17-year-olds. So it also fixed that. And so now that all that expired, so now 17-year-olds are not covered again. And it dropped down to $2,000 for everybody. So,
yeah.
And depending on the family, you know, it was a huge chunk of change, because for some families who didn't qualify for the credit at all, let's say you had a kid at 1 and 3, let's say you had two kids, that's $7,200 you just lost, you know, and for a low, you know, a very low income family. And for other families, it was thousands of dollars. And
yeah. And I think that was the other important thing I want to make sure people knew about, is we were just talking about how the sort of standard child tax credit does not cover the poorest people, the poorest parents and children. This did. And so this was, you know, you had some parents who went from, you know, 2,000 up to getting 3,000 or 3,600 per child. There were some that went from zero to getting a tax credit. And then I think the other thing that was kind of important, right, was that they did it in this advanced way. So it paid out monthly instead of at tax time. Can you speak to, like, why is that important?
The importance of the monthly credit to families is that they incur costs on a monthly basis. It's not like, you know, your housing costs, your food costs and things like that are all, you know, people live month to month. They don't live like, oh, I'm incurring these costs and I'll collect money for next year. And it's just fundamentally helpful to families. And it does recognize that the idea of the child tax credit is to help families with kids. And the estimated cost of raising a child in this country is, you know, nearly $250,000. So, you know, to get a few thousand dollars is not like covering the whole cost. So like, no one needs to be like, oh, I shouldn't be subsidizing, you know, other people's children. It's just recognizing that in a family, you know, in a household with several children, there's just higher costs. And
yeah,
it does benefit society. So there is this recognition, or should be recognition. And so the monthly thing was a huge importance to families. And that of course has also gone away.
So to recap, before Bruce lays down for us sort of what's in this plan that's being discussed right now, original tax credit, $2,000. It didn't hit the lowest earning families, and it was at tax time. That changes with the rewrite in the rescue plan for 1 year to between $3,000 and $3,600 per child, can be paid out monthly. I think that was up to the filer if they did that or wanted it in a lump sum. And it reached everybody. Like, basically everybody was eligible, up to, except for like very wealthy tax filers. So that's where we went to. Now it's back to normal for now. Kind of run through the important changes that are on the table in this sort of bipartisan negotiation that's taking place right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was provisions that expired from the Trump tax cuts with respect to things like the R&D tax credit, and then the provisions like the child tax credit that expired from, you know, the American Rescue Plan. And so, you know, a strange bedfellows came together where, you know, the Republicans really wanted an extension of the R&D tax credit, and some Democrats as well, obviously. And then vice versa, the provisions for the child tax credit, mostly championed by Democrats, but also many Republicans support the child tax credit. So it really came together in a bipartisan way. So Senator Ron Wyden, who's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Democrat from Oregon, and Jason Smith, who's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Republican from Missouri, got together and sort of crafted this combination of things. But the child tax credit provisions have really, you know, several important components. One is the phase-in for the current child tax credit is such that it doesn't really recognize families with multiple children. So you only get the phase-in at 15% of every dollar earned above $2,500. So you're basically earning on the first kid until you reach the full credit, and then you start getting the second kid and stuff like that. So one of the things that Wyden did that I think is really an important thing is it provided the 15% for each kid. So effectively the phase in, let's say then for a family of three, is really 45%. So really does have an enormous impact on families with multiple children. It also gets rid of, there was a cap on the amount of the full tax credit that poor families could get. I mean, it's unbelievable, some of the provisions that, you know, really preclude poor families from qualifying for the full credit. And so it phases that out so that once you get to the full credit, you actually qualify for the full credit. There's not some arbitrary cap. Mm-hmm. And it also causes the child tax credit to be inflation adjusted. So those are three kind of important things. And the thing for listeners to know is that it's far from what we want, but it does lift about 400,000 to 500,000 kids out of poverty. So not what we want, but it is a step. And it does benefit an estimated 15 million of the 18 to 19 million families who get no or partial credits. So, you know, it's helping low-income people is really what this change is focused on. And so it's definitely something we strongly support.
Hey there, lovely listeners. Ivory Bennett here, and I am beyond thrilled to welcome you to Interviews, my podcast where I spill the tea on healing, holistic health, and all things tantalizing. Join me for anecdotes about my life and engaging conversations with friends and lived experts offering diverse perspectives. With 17 years of lived experience in foster care, this journey is a collective practice of vulnerability, growth, and resilience. Interviews isn't just about my solo adventures. It's a community-driven exploration of laughter, introspection, and a whole lot of fun. Get ready for real talk with real experiences. You can listen to Interviews on Safe Camp Audio, your go-to for content that speaks to your mind, heart, and soul. If you're ready for a podcast that's entertaining, insightful, and all about self-discovery, hit that subscribe button now. Interviews, where every episode is a celebration of growth and resilience. Subscribe and join the conversation. I can't wait to see you there.
Okay, so adjusted for inflation, right? So it can go up if we get to a sort of situation like we have been recently. And it's more refundable and more accessible, essentially, for low-income. But then am I correct? The monthly thing has gone away. That's not part of this. And then now we're back to, like, this would not do anything for, like, the lowest income earners, right? There's still that $2,500 income requirement in there. So,
and just, I'm sorry, one other provision that's reaped some controversy, which is trying to recognize that families with children have, you know, various different issues that occur on a yearly basis. So what you don't want to do is penalize a family because their income went down. And that's what current child tax credit does. You know, you lose your job, or you have a baby, or you have cancer, or you need to take care of your parent or a child with disabilities or an illness, your income goes down, and thus your child tax credit goes down in lots of cases. So what Senator Wyden really pushed for was a look-back period that if your income dropped in the previous year, you could go back to the prior year and use that income. And again, it's kind of this nefarious thing where if it's higher, well, not nefarious, but it's ironic, it's higher, then you get a larger tax credit. So for families, you know, that are having a baby, for example, you know, we know that income drops dramatically on average. For a single mom, I think the estimates are that it drops like more than 40% on average. So a woman having a baby loses income and loses some share of the child tax credit. So this loop back was really important. But one of the things that people are talking about in the Senate, of there's some push to now get rid of it, which is ironic.
All right, we'll talk about the Senate in a minute. I think the other thing that was not clear to me just kind of reviewing this was how permanent is this? So obviously one of the things that was bittersweet about the rescue plan was that was a one-off thing. So it was like it created this one year, obviously a very important year, right? A lot of instability in the world. So good that it happened on that year. And it sure seems to have prompted a lot of research and analysis of what cash can do to lift people out of poverty, which is not rocket science. But so what is the permanent aspect of this, or is there any?
It's for 3 years. So it would apply to the 2023, your tax returns you're filing now. So it applied to 2023, this current year, 2024, and 2025. And then it it would expire with the other tax provisions in this package. So then the idea would be then in 2025, we would relitigate, you know, the entire tax package, which is, from our perspective, good, because, you know, we did not support the 1 year because of the, you know, the expiration. But like, we would like to come back and take a, you know, take a fresh look at this in 2025, because we'd like to get back to the provisions that were more like the American Rescue Plan.
Right. I get you. So like, this is almost not good enough that you'd want it to be permanent.
Yes.
You want it to be a kind of a lead thing. Okay. So you mentioned the Senate. Obviously, so this is past the House, correct? We are past the House here.
357 to 70. So it passed pretty overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis.
Right. So now it's up to the Senate. And so you mentioned the one thing that people are kind of debating in the Senate, but what, look, I don't want to get into the seat, like, you know, talking head, what percent can this pass or not? I think that's what people want to know now. Is there, you know, is there a chance in your mind that this will pass in the Senate and that we will have a child tax credit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that people who know me well know that I'm a very glass half empty person. So I definitely see all the scary pitfalls and potholes in it. So I'm worried, but I have to say, like, the House passing at 357 to 70, I think is really helpful. And I do believe that there should be 60 votes in the Senate. You know, now I do know some of the amendments really are concerning to me and actually very frustrating and somewhat even infuriating to us in some respects, because some of the corporate tax cuts that were in this package, I mean, are not, I don't know, like, there's some problems with those. Mm-hmm. But instead, what we're going to do is potentially have a bunch of amendments that pick on kids. And I just, it's just a little surprising to me, but I guess it shouldn't be. You know, John, as we, I think both of us lament all the time, is kids are so often an afterthought in public policy. And so, and sometimes, you know, picked on. They're the easy people to cut. So I think I worry about that dynamic in the Senate, is people who want to scale it back are going to look at aspects. And so, for example, people are attacking the look back provisions. And I would have to say, like, you know, you really think it's good policy to cut people's, for a family who's having a baby, you think it's, they lose income. And then also we should cut, you know, their child tax credit at a moment when infant and maternal mortality are, you know, rising. Like, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And and also in light of Dobbs and all kinds of things, right? Like, it's just bad policy. And you know, there's been this conversations about caregiving in this country, and we're going to penalize people who have to do that. And so anyway, so there's that amendment. Then there's this other conversation that's really annoying that will come up, which is in the House, there's some conversation about American citizen kids qualify for the credit. So if a kid has a Social Security number, they qualify for the credit. And there's some talk of offering an amendment that says if you have immigrants in your household, then you can't get the credit. So yet again, we're going to focus on the adults and not the kids. And so American citizen children would be harmed by that. Like, one quarter of kids in this country live in a household with immigrants. So I'm not saying that the way the language would work would, you know, cut a quarter of children, but it would cut a lot of them. And so, you know, there's that issue that may rise. And, you know, who knows, like, what's the vote count on that? I'm not sure. And so I'm really worried. And part of the deal is that the children got the same break as, you know, businesses in the package. And if now we start scaling back the kid piece, you know, I just don't find that. I find that offensive and acceptable. But, you know, what the Senate does.
So when, you know, during the kind of, we're still post-pandemic, I realize, but the time right afterwards, you did see a few conservative legislators come out with support for the idea of a more robust tax credit. Just off the top, I remember, you know, obviously Senator Mitt Romney put out a pretty specific and well thought out plan. I think Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri, had a more kind of just basic concept for this. That seems like very fundamentally different to me than a pretty overwhelming vote in the House that includes a lot of Republicans. So do you feel like things have kind of fundamentally changed on this issue? Like, there's pretty locked in, you know, real bipartisan consensus that a child tax credit improvement is necessary or a good thing in this country. And, you know, we're just in a different place with that or no?
Not quite. And the problem is that people have the unfortunate ability to, even on a program that's called the Child Tax Credit, and that was purposeful to help all families with kids. And yet there's still this, the adults become the focus. And so there was a paper put out by Heritage Action and some other groups saying that, for example, if you look, get rid of the look back, some people might decide they, you know, don't need to work because they only, they could qualify for the full credit, even if in the past year they work less. And so there just becomes then this focus on adults and also kind of a silly, you know, you're going to punish all families because you're concerned that, you know, a few people, and there's all kinds of reasons why, you know, like if people got a few extra dollars, they might actually reduce the amount of work they do because they can now pay for child care and stuff. And they can, or they, you know, they can take, do more caregiving or whatever. So there's not nefarious reasons for people wanting to cut back on work a little bit.
I'm glad you said that, because I do think that that's, you hear that and it's almost like this like leap to somebody just like cackling in the corner of their house, like, I got the government. But like, yeah, there's, you know, when you're like two earning parents, whether they are with, live together or not, yeah, there's plenty of situations where probably the fiscally best thing for them, the kid, and society writ large is like, one stays home and cares for children. That's not like the worst thing in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think that there is, it's really interesting. If you look at the polling on the child tax credit, for example, if you ask the question and you focus on things like, you know, should we have a fully refundable child tax credit that lifts, you know, nearly half of children out of poverty, you know, three quarters of Americans say yes, absolutely. And only like 20% of people say no. So it's like 75-20, you know, it's a really strong, but then if you get, say, should we have a child tax credit, but then get into all the adult issues, like, you know, but then maybe have a work requirement and then support, you know, the majority of people still support it, but it, the support drops into like 60%. It's like more like 60-40. Mm-hmm. And so it really, the framing, it, you know, and you know this better than most people, is the communications and the framing just so matters. And so if we can keep the focus on children as opposed to the deservedness and individualism and all that kind of stuff about, you know, adults, support actually rises. And it's hard not to, also the conversation. So the Heritage Action thing says, well, you know, people might stop working, you know, a few people might stop working. And so then the left then's response is often, well, that's not true. The evidence shows. So the debate then all becomes about work.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and we're like, as child advocates going, you guys, this helps every aspect of the lives of kids. Like, first of all, the work thing, it's not true. People don't stop working to get a few, $1,000. But like the idea that it would, you know, reduce child abuse and neglect, and it would improve early childhood and educational outcomes and healthcare outcomes. And, you know, and we know that actually, you know, poverty results in more incidents of people in the juvenile justice system. And, you know, just on, it's everything. It's all aspect, hunger, homelessness. So that just sometimes then just gets sidetracked. And we, you know, we really, our hope is that we can really keep the focus on kids or just the rest of the thing. But I think there is a, you know, huge efforts to distract. And
I know that you guys mostly focus on the, you know, the federal aspect, the federal spending, but what are you seeing out there in states? It seemed to me like I've made very anecdotally noticed some states are taking up like they're going to kind of do this themselves and maybe move more robust tax credits on the state level this year.
Yeah, there's definitely, there's been, you know, there was some states that passed last year. I can't remember the exact number, but double digits numbers of states who passed some form of child tax credits in a variety of states, like, you know, in a very diverse, both blue and red states. And so I know that there's a push to really expand that in other states. And even some of the states who took a first bite of the apple are going to come back and try to do a more robust package. So there's good movement on some of these things. And it kind of gets at this question of, does money matter? And it absolutely does. And I think that people are beginning to really recognize that, and that we should really support our youngest and most poor families. I mean, if you look at the data on the kids left behind in the current child tax credit, it's young kids, right? And you know, as we just talked about, like your first year of life is your poorest as a child. And so it's those kids who are left behind. It's rural kids. It's kids of color. It's kids with disabilities. And so aren't those the kids that we should actually be, you know, to be providing greater support for, not less? And that's what we're trying to do, is flip this conversation and really make sure that we're not leaving kids behind any longer.
Last thing before I get you out of here, while this is all happening with the child tax credit, this is all, I should probably say this earlier, this is part of the negotiations around tax reform. But yeah, at the same time, there is movement afoot on trying to actually get a spending deal done for this year. Any big boosts or proposed cuts that First Focus have, you know, your collective eye on, things that are really jumping out as either good or bad, and what's being bandied about in Washington?
Yeah, absolutely. This is of huge importance to us. And again, in the conversations around the budget, you know, you had, if you kind of go back and think of the State of the Union address where the president said, you know, you guys want to cut Social Security and Medicare, and this, you know, Republicans yelled, no. So off the table, right? And then veterans were like, are you going to cut us? And then so Republicans were like, well, of course not. We're not cutting you guys. So as you take, and then defense, oh, we're not cutting that. And then Biden administration just passed a huge infrastructure plan. They're not, well, we're not cutting that. Well, what's left? And so the our deep concern is as people are thinking about some cuts in the budget, what really is left are programs that really are important to kids. And so we've had a 25-year bipartisan deal to fully fund WIC, which is, you know, food program for low-income babies and toddlers and moms. And they may renege on that this year, which then would create waiting lists and denial of you know, assistance. So for the first time in 25 years. And the House bill also proposed things like eliminating the Healthy Start program and things like that, which is a program to cut infant and maternal mortality. Like, we have a rising infant mortality. Like, why would, at this moment in time, and huge cuts to Title I in education and things like that. So again, you know, we would argue that kids are being sort of picked on and disproportionately cut in the proposals in the House. The Senate had much better provisions for kids. And so we're hoping that what comes out is a package that leaves kids off the chopping block. But it's, you know, it's really unclear how this is all going to end up. We're watching very closely and very concerned.
All right. Well, we will continue to update our listeners and readers at the imprint on what's going on with the child tax credit. But Bruce, appreciate you coming on and giving us a level set here, because I felt pretty out of it coming back from holiday. So I'm glad I could get an expert on to help folks out. So Bruce Leslie, First Focus, thanks for joining us on the Imprint Weekly Podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much, John. Love your show. So I'm a frequent listener. So keep doing all the great work you're doing.
Thanks to Kat McLeod of the Self-Taught Podcast and Bruce Leslie of First Focus on the Children for joining us today. The Imprint Weekly Podcast is a production of the Safe Camp Audio Network, which is a division of Fostering Media Connections. Please visit safecampaudio.org on the web or at Safe Camp Audio on all major social media. This podcast is produced and mixed by Christine Onjoko, with music by Luke Giroux and Cyrus Elia. If you enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you'd consider subscribing or giving us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. And we would really appreciate if you would consider supporting our work here on the podcast and in print. Small donations from our listeners and readers go a long way towards helping us grow and cover more great stories in child welfare and youth justice. To support us, it's very easy. Just visit imprintnews.org/donate. You can follow The Imprint on Twitter and Facebook by searching the handle @TheImprintNews, and you can visit us on the web at imprintnews.org. You can always email us at tips@imprintnews.org. I'm John Kelly, and we'll see you next week.